Yes.
All right. As they said, my name is Jason Fish. I work for Purdue University, ITAP, the information technology at Purdue. My name is on Twitter at Jason D. Fish. I would recommend everybody to send me things as they need to throughout the presentation. You have questions, comments, suggestions. You think I'm completely wrong, throw it up there. Put the hashtag on there. Let me know. I'm open for suggestions. Has anybody ever seen this page when they go to dig, click on a link, seen service unavailable? Nobody? Yeah? Yeah, exactly. There could be many reasons for this. You know, somebody's got a great joke out there, great picture, and everybody wants to go see it. It makes it to the homepage of Dig. Well, the old Dig, I guess, not the new Dig anymore. Nobody goes to it, right? But, yeah. So they go there, and they get their hundreds of thousands of people viewing their pages, and they get nothing because they weren't set up to handle these users. So this is what caching is trying to help. So here we go. Why cache? Why use caching? Does everybody know what caching is? Anybody doesn't know what caching is? Do I need to start there first? Nobody? Okay, I'll continue that. It helps with your performance, your scalability, has a reduced cost of ownership, which I'll talk about in a little bit, moves the interactions closer to the user, and it simplifies complex processes. So here you got your multi-tiered environment, like everyone has. You got your happy user, you got your web pages, and you got your database. Your user requests a page, let's say it's your home page. It gets data from the database, sends it back to the page, the page gets processed, sends the HTML back to the user. All right, perfect. The user gets what he wants, right? We get user two coming in, same thing. Request the home page. The home page asks for the data. The data gets sent back, and it gets sent back to the user. Already we can kind of see the same thing's happening again and again and again, right? Third user three comes in. Same thing, ask for the same exact page, request the same data from the database, sends the same response back to the page, processes that page and sends it back to the user. We're still all right. Three users, one coming in right after the other, not too big of a deal. We have all those interactions over there from the page to the database, but you know, no big deal, right? Well, what happens when you have your five users coming in all at the same time, asking for the same page? That means five requests get sent to the database, five responses get sent back to the page, that page gets processed five more times, and it gets sent back to the users. That's, so far we're at eight database calls for the exact same data, which is really not too bad, eight database calls. What happens when you're getting 80 at a time, 800 at a time, or 8,000 at a time? You know, that interaction between there is gonna get really messy. So what we're trying to do is make one database call for the data that everybody needs. Reduce that interaction between your web server and your database server. Some general caching rules, and they're very general. If it's used more than once, it can probably be cached, right? And if it's not specific to a user, it can also be cached. Now, I don't mean user data. I mean specific to the user. If I go to page one and you go to page one, we see the same thing. That's not specific. If I go to page one and see different options, different content because I'm me, and you see different content because you're you, that's specific to me. That might not be a good idea to cache those type of pages. You don't really get the same benefits. You can overdo caching, so we'll talk a little bit later about where to start and how not to overdo it. You want to support failover. Caching is something extra you're adding into your system that helps make it a better site. It's not a not something you add in first, so you need to be able to support failover. Anybody notice Facebook being down? No, probably a few weeks ago or a month ago, right? For hours and hours and hours, that never happens. Well, that had something to do with caching. It wasn't purposely on caching, the caching service fault, but it had to do with that, and they didn't support failover very well. By also supporting failover, you're able to use cheaper, less reliable machines for your caching servers, which, as I talked about earlier, you can reduce the cost of ownership. Test. Are we all developers in here? Anybody not a developer? All right. Well, when you talk to your developers and you ask them to implement caching, it's very important for them to test. Since they're not making that complete round trip back to the database, processing that page again, and sending it to the user, being able to test and make sure the user is still getting the correct data is very important. The technology stack we use within my group, it's not really important, but I'm going to show some code examples. But we use ASP.NET MVC 2.0 and SQL Server 2008 R2. if you're not using these, it doesn't mean this doesn't apply to you. You can use the general rules, but I am going to show some code examples and wanted you to make sure that you knew what I was talking about. So the first thing I want to talk about is output caching, and sometimes it's called page caching. This is when you cache the actual results of the page. So it's already made the call to the database, brought the data back, processed that page. Maybe there's a bunch of complex processes that are going on and sending that back to the user. But before you send it back to the user, you cache it locally. So the next time somebody asks for that page, you don't have to do any of the processes. You don't have to go get the data. It's already there to send right back to the user. Page output, there it is. Great candidates for this would be, again, not specific user pages, like a landing page or FAQ page. A landing page is something, you know, you have a large amount of users that are going to see. There could be data that's getting from there or processes that are going on. And if it's getting hit over and over and over by the same or by a lot of different users, then cache those results, put them in memory, so make it quicker for everyone to get to and see. Frequently asked questions, again, that data is rarely going to change. Right, your frequently asked questions don't change on a minute-to-minute basis. Usually have 10 frequently asked questions, and then it keeps the same for a week, a month, a year, and then it gets updated. So a good candidate for output caching. A subsection of this output caching is what's called partial page caching. This is when you don't cache the entire result page, but only specific parts. So think about like a forum. So if I've made 10 posts on there, over there on the left of each one of my posts is my name, my picture, when I first started the forum, how many posts I have total. Instead of processing that each time that you're asking for that forum page, cache that partial, that piece of the page, and serve that up, and it makes the page load faster for the user. In .NET, you have a number of, can you see those? Can you see the little red dot there, anybody? Yeah, kind of? Okay. I like the thumbs up in the back, very nice. There's a number of parameters that you can specify. The two that I want to talk about today are the duration and vary by param. So the duration, as you can imagine, it's required. You know, how long is it going to be in the cache? It's specified in seconds, but it's not guaranteed to be in cache for that entire period of time. Can anybody guess why? Something you want to stay in there the entire time it's specified? Yes, the cache fills up. So every system has a maximum amount of space to put stuff in. When that space fills up, the oldest stuff gets pushed out. So even if you specify that it's going to be in there for a year, if the cache fills up, it's going to push that out until it's called again. So in MVC, you have your method in the controller. This one's just passing back one query result set. But think about a page that had 10, 12, 15 different query results that are being passed into the page. It might be a little bit better, but I couldn't fit that all on a page or on a slide. You add your output cache in there and your duration, 600. So how long is this going to stay in cache? 10 minutes. There we go. You get a thumbs up twice. All right? Easy enough. See? It's just one little line you added in there, and .NET takes care of it for you. Other languages also do some similar things. But I've added one line in there, and that page is going to load faster for every user that comes to my site. The vary by param, it's also required, but can be set to none. If we saw on the previous slide, I set the query param to none, because there is no param for that method. It creates a different cached version for each value of the parameter. So if you pass in a parameter value of 1, it creates one cache in memory. You pass it in 2, another one, 3, another one, and so on and so forth. You can specify multiple parameters very easily. So if your method has 10 different parameters, you can specify all 10 in there. What that does is the combinations that you might have in your cache might get so specific that it's no longer useful to be caching that. So as the number of your parameters grow, it becomes less likely a candidate for caching. And it results in many more items in your cache. So the more parameters you have, the quicker your cache is going to fill up, and the quicker it's going to push out stuff that you might need. Right here we have the vary by param as ID. Why did I use ID right there? Anybody? Because that's the part that changes. Yes, that's our parameter in our actual method right here, right? So that's where you get the names. They're not just made up, or there's not some standard. It does make sense here. Anybody know how long this one stays in memory? Until it gets kicked out, yes. Whoops. We have the max value for an integer here. I don't remember what it is, but it's something really large. So it's pretty much going to stay in memory until it gets kicked out. Thank you. We can do that for this particular method because for us, posts can't get edited and posts can't get deleted. Once somebody makes a post, it's there forever. So we can put int.max value because it'll always be there until it gets kicked out. Data caching. This is a piece that we've really used and really dove into and used wholeheartedly within our team. This is where we've really found the most useful, in our applications, because using object-oriented language, that data can get called from multiple pages. So even if I've got the page cached, that doesn't mean necessarily that the query's cached. Does that make sense to people? And also, most performance bottlenecks in any system under heavy load are occurring at the database level, not at the web server level or any other level. It's usually, and I would say really, really 99% of the time, it's happening because of your database. So you do exactly that. You get the query from the database, and you put that into memory. You don't put the whole page results into memory. You just put the results from that query in memory. Good candidates for data caching are your most used queries and also your most expensive queries. Does everyone know what I mean by most expensive queries? Yes, the queries that take the most time in your database. So let's say you have a query that takes 5 or 10 seconds. Beyond the fact that you have a query that takes 5 to 10 seconds to run, when a user hits that page or a page that needs that data, instead of waiting that 5 to 10 seconds every time they hit that page to run that query, it's automatically in memory and you don't have to worry about it. Here's a very simple method that goes and gets a person by their ID. And to add caching, we want to add caching to it. So in caching, .NET has a whole system set up for it, and there's an insert method just like there was on the output cache. And the three parameters that I want to talk about are the key, or what you're calling it in cache. So it's pretty much a name value pair. In this space and memory, you have names and you have the values that are in those names. So you specify a key, you specify the value, and the other one I want to talk about is the expiration date. First thing you do when you want to cache is you specify where you're getting it from. So our name right here, person_getPersonById, and then the parameter that I'm sending in. Naming of the key is very important because if I have the name in two different methods of the same name, then you're going to be getting the same results, and you're going to be really confusing your user or getting back the wrong object types, and it's really problematic. So what we've done is we've named it by the object name, underscore method name, and then any parameters that we're passing in. That works for us really well. You have to find your own method that works within your development team and stick with it. It's something that you really need to discuss and make sure everybody understands what you're doing before you move forward. So right here, we're trying to get this out of cache. If there's nothing in there, then it returns null. If there's something in there, it returns an object of some type. So if it is null, we need to go get it from the database. After we get it from the database, we then insert it into .NET's cache. We specify again the same name you'll see up here, the actual object that's being put into cache, null, this is for dependencies, we'll talk about that in a little bit, how long it's going to be in the cache, 10 minutes. And I've specified here that we're not using sliding expiration. Sliding expiration is if I go to a page that needs this data at 3 o'clock and I have sliding expiration turned off, then because I've specified 10 minutes here, it'll be removed from the cache at 3:10. Sliding expiration is if I went there at 3 o'clock and someone went there at 3:08, the new expiration is 3:18, right? So you have to kind of look at your data and see if it makes sense to use sliding expiration or not. And then, just as before, we return that person. But because we don't know what's being returned. It's just a plain object. We have to tell it that it's a person. Cache removal, also very simple in .NET and very simple in many other languages. You just specify that key that we were using earlier. This needs to be added everywhere where that data can be changed. So anywhere within your application that person object can be changed, you need to make sure you're removing it from the cache. So when you edit methods, delete methods, if you have edit methods that change multiple people, you need to make sure that that's in there. And this is really the hardest part to get right, which is why testing is really critical. There's two different methodologies as far as data caching, a push methodology and a pull methodology. The push methodology invalidates the cache, so anywhere in your edit, delete functions, you immediately delete it from the cache and then put information back into the cache. This reduces the time for the first hit, so the next time that data is called, you can get it right from memory instead of calling it from the database. This methodology also means that there's more information in the cache than is needed. When you immediately repopulate that cache after something's edited, you don't necessarily know if someone's going to call that page that needs that data again anytime soon. Even though you're putting the stuff in the cache, it might push other more valuable information out. The pull methodology, on the other hand, invalidates the cache and then leaves it empty. This makes for a longer first request, so the next time someone goes there, they have to actually hit the database to get the data back. But it does mean that the hottest items, the most used items, are the ones that are in the cache. And it's not actually in the cache until it's accessed. So I ask you guys, which is better, push or pull? Depends? What's it depend on? Okay, you're right. You're right, it does depend. It depends on your application. It depends on how you're using that data. If it's something that you know is immediately going to be looked at again, you might as well put it back in that back into the cache so it can be accessed right away quickly. If it's something where you don't know if it's going to be accessed again anytime soon, use pull methodology and let that first request use the time. Any questions? Does that make sense? All right, so just for a second here, think about your environment or think about an application that you have that you think you might take advantage of some caching methods. This is something that we didn't do when we first started our implementation of caching, and it came back to kind of burn us. Our web environment is clustered. So we have two web servers that run our application simultaneously. What this means is the cache is saved on both servers. So whenever somebody asks for the page on node A, it gets saved. When they ask for it on node B, it gets saved again. That means twice as much space is needed for the cache. The validity of the data is also unknown. So let's say I call on node A, that cache is in there. I can get it right there. And it's also, I can't use both hands here. It's also in node A and node B, right? So I go to node A, I make my update, and I'm using pull methodology, and it deletes it from this cache, right? A user can still go to node B, and it'll still be in the cache, and they can still use it. That's problematic, right? You don't want to get emails saying people see deleted data, people see their data that they just edited that hasn't taken the edits yet. You don't like getting those phone calls. But it shouldn't stop you. There is an answer. Memcached. Anybody ever heard of Memcached? Yeah? It's free. Who doesn't like free? We don't have any money in our budgets, right? But free, you can do free. It's open source. There's a huge community behind it. It's distributed, so that means if you're using just one server or 100 servers, it can run all of them just the same. It doesn't care. And there's libraries available for almost any language you can think of, PHP, Java, Ruby, and what we're using, .NET. What it's really doing is taking your individual web servers, cache that's separate, you know, on node A and node B, and it's making them into the same cache pool. Memcache takes care of it. You don't have to really think about it at all. So whereas before, in this example, there's 64 megabytes of space on each server, on web server, now you have 128 megabytes of space. So you've already doubled your cache space, and you've gotten rid of your validity of your cache data problem just by using this free tool. And you might be thinking, well, it's free, it's open source. Well, that means it's crappy, right? Well, in this case, it doesn't. Twitter uses it. YouTube uses it, Wikipedia uses it, Dig uses it, although that's probably not relevant anymore, like I said. WordPress uses it, and Flickr uses it. I mean, these are large, millions of user communities with hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of pieces of content, and they're using it to deliver their content to users. I think it's okay for our shop to use for our campus, right? So Memcache, you'll see that this is, the implementation of it looks almost exactly like .NET. So with the libraries that are available, they've made it almost seamless to transition into. You first specify the key, just like we did before. You see if it's in cache or not, if it's null. If it's not, then you go get it from the database and insert it in. Use the key, here's the object, and here's the time span. It's that easy. There's nothing you don't have to do some huge change. You have to install it on your servers. You have to tell it which servers you use in your web config, and then you implement it. It's that simple. It's also just the same for removal. It takes the key and it deletes it. So this is something we found to be very useful because it was simple. It didn't cost anything, and it took care of our problem. We didn't have to check which server was the cache being saved on. Is it right? Is it not right? Could we only do certain things? Memcache took care of all that for us. The first project we used this on is something called Hotseat. It allows for back channel communication in the classroom. So we have large lecture halls at Purdue, 300, 400, 500 students, and sometimes it's hard for those students to raise their hand. The professor doesn't see them, or they're too embarrassed to ask their question. Well, what we did here is build a tool that allows them to ask their questions, and they can even ask anonymously, so they don't have to get embarrassed about their question. And the teacher can go in there a few times during class and say, what are the most popular questions? Or what question, is there a really, engaging question that I should really talk more about because this is, a good question. But what this means is we're refreshing this page that students are looking at every 5 seconds to make sure that what the student's looking at is fresh and they don't have to keep going up to their toolbar and hit refresh every 5 seconds to make sure they have their data. What that means, though, is that we have a classroom of 400 students refreshing every 5 seconds. That's 4,800 database requests a minute. That's roughly 300,000 database requests in the hour that they're sitting there in lecture. As you can imagine, that started to really take a toll on our database. So this is when we implemented the caching, or memcache. We went from, as you'll see during an hour lecture, 295,000 database requests when we didn't have any caching to under 9,000 requests during that same hour when we turned caching on. I mean, we realized almost 97% savings on our database whenever we implemented just this. And if you can see this, we implemented it only on 10 queries. We didn't implement it on every query throughout the application. We watched our logs, saw where it needed to be added, and we implemented it on those 10 queries. And we, like I said, almost 97% of our traffic to our database was removed. The pages went fast. Nobody even noticed that there was so many people on the site anymore. The next, after a good successful implementation on one project, you try to implement it again. So we built this thing called Mixable over the summer. And what it does is, instead of, like Hotseat is kind of professor driven, where they pose a question and students pose their questions each lecture. Mixable is more student driven. So they log in, it gives them their classes, and they can post files with Dropbox, they can ask questions and other students will answer and comment, and they can post files and links and YouTube videos, and it'll all be right here within the system. But as you can see, there's a lot of queries on any given page. A query to get their classes, a query to get their groups, to get their lists, to get all the posts, images, videos, links, files, podcasts, their user data. There's a lot of queries on any one given page. So again, perfect opportunity to use some caching. For this implementation, we used LoadStorm, which is a load testing software. It's really easy to use. I don't know if I can recommend it, but I would recommend it. right? Yeah, you can't endorse things. I don't know how that works. What we did is we had a 100 user test that took 30 minutes. It built up from one user to 100 users. It stepped up during each time span, and you'll see we have the green bars are when we didn't have any caching, the red bars when we had only our top query cached, and the blue bars when we had our top six. Our total database calls got cut in half. We didn't have any more errors implementing caching. The request time went to a fraction of the time, but yet our total requests during that 30-minute test went up 3 times, as well as our requests per second. What that really means is that even though we had 3 times more requests during our test, we only had 50% of the database queries called. So think about that for a second. You were able to support 3 times as many people or 3 times as many requests to your site, and there was less strain on your database. We went to 0 timeout errors when we had when we did the initial test without any caching. After about 35 simultaneous users, you know, hitting your site, we started to see timeout errors in this application. Whereas when we implemented caching on just 6 queries, that went to no timeout errors at all. So, you know, you don't want your user sitting there for 30 seconds while the page loads and then all of a sudden get nothing back, right? Nobody wants to see that. The page load time went down from 2.24 seconds to 0.35 seconds. And you might look at that and say, well, 2 seconds isn't really that long to wait. But when you're going from page to page and doing different things and trying to get something done, 2 seconds is a long time to wait for a web page to load. So we cut it down to under half a second. And that's with more simultaneous users, or more requests per second, I'm sorry. We went from 9 requests per second to 30. So even though the requests went up, again, the time to deliver that page went down. So it's the silver bullet, right? It's the answer to all our problems. Well, I wouldn't say yes, but I would say it's pretty close. It's pretty close. There are some things we need to make sure we think about. The validation of the cache. Like I said before, it's something that you can really get bit on. You need to make sure that your environment can handle the cache and how you're implementing it, as well as knowing, making sure that you're invalidating your cache and removing it from cache in all the appropriate places. Writing versus reading. If your application is very heavy on writing versus very heavy on reading, then it's probably not a good application for a lot of caching, because you can't cache a database insert. You can only really cache the results. So that's another thing. Dependencies are something you really need to think about. So if I have a method that says get all of my posts, and I cache that, so every time I go look at my posts anywhere, it gets it really quickly. Well, then if I edit one of my posts, you know, how do I make sure that I invalidate that list of objects that was returned? That's can be a real tricky area. There's ways to take care of that, but it's something you really need to think about before you do your implementation. It doesn't mean that you can just implement it and everything will be just fine. You still have to optimize your queries. You still have to make sure your logic's correct. It doesn't fix a bad application. It makes a good application better. So what I want you guys to take away are that caching can improve your performance, your scalability, and reduce your costs of your systems. It's very easy to implement. No matter what language you're in, they all have a way to cache. I can almost guarantee it. And if it doesn't, Memcache probably can do it for you. The results are life-changing. And I'll tell you, it is. On our team, this is something we don't wait for our applications to get used enough to need it. After we get done developing it, we develop these load tests and then implement caching, because you never know that day that one of your applications is going to get dig bombed or some other site pushing users to your application. An intelligent implementation is needed. You can't and shouldn't just put it everywhere. You should put it where it's needed and only where it's needed. With that, that's kind of the last things I have. I did want to let you know that I have 2 colleagues presenting tomorrow in this same track, Alex Kingman doing the evolution of form design, and Steve Hetty doing reputation systems and web communities. They're great presentations. I've seen them, and you should come to them tomorrow. Any questions? Yes, Scott.
I don't use .NET, so does that truly store the data in memory then? So are there problems with, is there any time where that data gets stored on disk somewhere, or is it truly just pulling that from memory?
Using Memcached?
Well, whatever method here. So that, in other words, you're getting the subsequent calls are not going to your database.
Mm-hmm.
They're truly coming out of memory?
Yes and no. You can put them in different places. With .NET, you can tell it to store it in a browser or in a cookie or on the user's side. You know, you can tell it different places to store that data so that you can push it as far to the user as you can without it. You know, you obviously don't want to put student grades, push them to the browser and save it in a cookie. But things that make sense, you can put them where they make sense. So not using .NET really doesn't make a difference. It just depends on... it's language independent. I just use .NET because that's what we use as an example. Yes?
Now, the stuff you've shown us is all basically in the application. Is there any provision for caching within a database itself? Do something like MySQL have a way to cache its own queries in some way that doesn't require the overhead of running the query every time? You see what I'm asking?
Yes.
Has to be done in the application, or can it be done on the database then?
It can be done on the database. I don't know as much about it. That's not how we've used it in the past. So I'm assuming that you have applications in different places that all call the same database, and you're trying to look for a way to still cache those results. With Memcache, you can put it in some place and call it from multiple applications, so it doesn't have to be from the same application pool each time. So that might be an answer for you, but I don't know as much about the actual caching within the database.
You mentioned LoadStorm. Is that if I want to start doing that, because I've got a lot of database stuff going on, if I want to get started in this, mm-hmm. then obviously I got to start with some kind of a benchmark so I know what's going on now.
Mm-hmm.
Is LoadStorm a tool that you use for that? Or if not, what's a good... How do you get that data, or do you have that on your application? Do you have to build that in?
What we do is we usually build the application with no caching to start with, because we don't know what our pain points are going to be to start an application. You know, we build the application to the best of our ability, and then we start testing. With LoadStorm, they have a free account for 20 users, and what you'll find is even with 20 users, a lot of times your application is going to break anyway. Simultaneous users hitting your pages, you know, after another. What we do while we run that load test is we track our database, see which queries are being called and which queries are being called the most, which ones are taking the most time, and that's kind of our starting point. Is we look at our database and see which queries are being called the most.
I guess I'm wondering, does LoadStorm have access to your database then?
No. LoadStorm just hits the page and then tells you how fast it comes back. These are kind of two different things we run simultaneously. We run the load test, and it gives us how fast the pages are being loaded, how many requests you're making per second, that kind of thing. Whereas we also kind of put a trace on our database to see while the load tracking is going on to make sure we can watch our database and know what's going on. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I was just wondering about the database side of what tool you're using to actually look at the data. It's just something with the database.
With SQL Server, which is what we're using, it comes with a SQL profiler,
okay.
which does it for you. I'm not sure about other tools or other databases. Yes.
We also use JMeter, which is just an open source tool for the Apache Foundation mm-hmm. for load testing. Pretty good success with that. It doesn't have all the necessarily the bells and whistles. It can be a bit of a pain in the butt to get working.
That's what we started down that path of JMeter, and it was taking us too long to get started. With LoadStorm, you tell it what your homepage is. It loads up that page and says, "What do you want to do? Submit a form, click a link, and you do it." And it follows whatever path you give it. It's kind of nice, but we did definitely look through JMeter to start with.
MySQL, you can also turn on slow queries logging, which you probably want to do more on your database.
Oh, I would completely agree. All this load testing should be done on development servers. That's not affect any production environment.
You can set the threshold. So, you know, if this query exceeded however many seconds, milliseconds, or whatever, it will write that in the log.
Do you remember the question?
Slow
It's very similar. The difference would be there that you're caching the execution plan, but you're not caching the actual the execution of the query.
Right.
You're caching the building of the plan.
Like mostly, especially with .NET, they pretty much standardize on stored procedures and stuff like that, where statements to be coupled with caching.
Mm-hmm. I would. We used to use stored procedures, but we've moved on to using Link. It's a little bit faster to develop with, but yes. But I'd say if you're still writing your queries in your application, I would first move you to stored procedures. That's a great first step. Any other questions?
I was going to also say the Zen framework, which is a PHP framework equivalent to .NET. They've got tons of stuff that.
Yeah. Good note. If anybody didn't hear him, he said the Zend framework for PHP.
Zend.
Yeah, Zend. Okay.
It's the company that makes the language.
Okay. Any other questions, comments in the back there?
The other thing I was going to suggest is we just were using super cache on a WordPress site, and what we discovered was maybe caching in ways we didn't realize we were already caching. So, for example, WordPress actually caches its RSS feed block, and it does it on a 12-hour cache. Which none of us knew. So here we're spending all of our time trying to debug Supercache and figuring out what the heck is going on, but in turn, in fact, it's actually something else. So just, I think the moral of the story for us would be aware of everything that's going to be caching, because you know things can start to act a little bit
odd. All right. Any other questions? Comments? All right. Thank you very much.